Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another Locked On Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Joining me, you heard him, Tom Schreier, frequent contributor to the program. Tom, how you doing?
I want to start with this. I'm doing well. Andrew Wiggins is making me happy, and I want to start with something positive because there's a lot of negative things to say about the Wolves. I think his game is pretty much on point. I know I can't remember which game it was, but he had a really bad shooting night.
Just lead the whole show. But now that you've started,
Whole thing. I just have to get this off my chest because it's making me happy. I've always been an Andrew Wiggins fan. I've seen him steal multiple cookies out of the press room, and I have no problem with that. I'm sure it gives him energy before the game. He's also very bashful. I'm like, dude, you know, you can steal cookies, man. You're one of the players or whatever. But he's
okay. Stop.
He can do that.
If Andrew Wiggins walks into the media room and does anything, do you think he's sneaky? And like,
he was sneaky.
He's not stealing anything because he's blatant. It's obvious. Of course he's there.
No, he does it after everyone's gone through the aisle or whatever with all the food. They have really good food there, by the way. But yeah, he kind of sneaks in when no one's really around, and I've seen him a couple times, and he just kind of smiles and leaves. But anyways, I like that he seems more comfortable kind of with the attention he's getting, and that he's given better answers. I still think Gorgui Dieng is probably the best, like, most thoughtful player in terms
of the best quote.
Yeah, I mean, but he, beyond just a quote, he's not about liners or anything. He just is really smart in how he analyzes basketball, very quick after a game when it's emotional. That's a very difficult thing to do. But it's just, and I can just tell Wiggins is kind of happier, and I really do help Karl Anthony Towns, who, look, 47-18, that was a hell of a game, and really still baffles me how they lost that game when he's playing so well. But
we're going to discuss.
I'm sure we will. But I'm going to call it a sophomore slump because by Karl Anthony Towns standards, where he's literally established himself year one as a once-in-a-generational player, I think he's slumping a little bit. I do think it hurts the team. I also kind of am concerned with the way he describes games and how he thinks they should be won and how everyone else describes games and how they think they should be won. Namely, he's saying, put this on my shoulders, and everyone else is saying, you know, we need to play together. He will ball that, and I'm sure we'll touch on all that. But I like Wiggins. I like where he's at right now. And if he can be this player.
You're talking as a... You haven't mentioned anything on the court, but in terms of the way he carries himself compared to years past when he's been a little standoffish and shy.
Yeah,
that's the main point you're hammering home.
But to be clear, on the court as well.
He's shown improvement, sure.
Well, and I think he sees that confidence in his shot. I mean, I think he's willing at times, especially when Thibodeau isolates him, to go, look, if this guy gives me a shot from three points, I'm going to dribble up and knock it down, right? And it's not to say he hasn't had a few slumps here and there. I think that's natural for all shooters, all basketball players, really all athletes across all sports. But when he's on, this is the Wiggins I thought he could be, just given the little bit I watched him at Kansas, especially in very, you know, close games or important games. And then just kind of throughout the years as he's fought a, you know, rookie wall in his first year with all the minutes he played, what he did kind of fighting that sophomore slump. And it just, if this is the player Wiggins can be, I guess I think you can look at it and go, at least the multiple coaching changes, the fact that, you know, he went from high school coach to 1 year in college to what he's done in the pros, his development is working out. He still attacks the basket. And now that he's got this shot, he's really lethal from all points on the court in many different situations, and has been kind of that rush of energy they need at times when they've stagnated. Now it's not just the third quarter. Now they kind of, it's sometimes the fourth, it's sometimes the second.
You never know when.
Never know when, but it's going to hit you. If they're going to get over this and show some promise and give people reason to believe beyond just potential and hype, which is kind of what they've been riding on, you know, ever since Thibodeau came in, if you want tangible results, I think it's actually going to start with Andrew Wiggins and the energy he brings as an offensive threat, as kind of as I've always described him, even to this day when he's a little more talkative, he's still the silent killer that seems willing to kind of dismantle your team with a smile on his face and without saying too much. And so I want to start with that because there are a lot of negative aspects of the Wolves that we're probably going to cover here.
Well, I'll tell a story, and while you're doing that, or while I'm doing that, you come up with story or topic number two.
All right,
we'll
I'll
discuss on Locked On because you've commandeered the show. And
hey,
I do,
you do this every day. I'm trying to give you a little,
no,
little break.
No, I need it. I am. I'm not being condescending in the slightest. Okay, maybe a little. but no, the anecdote I'll use is in his first season, Toronto's in town, second half of the year. All of the Canadian media, basketball Canadian media, shows up to cover it, and it was a breath of fresh air because all year the local media jackals are trying to pry answers out of Andrew Wiggins and trying to be, you know, trying to, while at the same time trying to establish a rapport, so they can only tentatively do so much. And these Canadian reporters come in and they're relentless. This is Canadians. You know,
I mean, Sam Mitchell said this, who coached in Toronto. He said it's a harder media market than you'd think.
Yeah, they're this is, and this is Canada's basketball son. Anyway, they're asking all the tough questions, and everybody's just sitting back going, "Oh, this is great, this is great." And he some Canadian reporter, I forget his name, brings up Brian Windhorst, and Brian Windhorst made a generalization about Canadian basketball players and how the competition isn't as strong there at the AAU level and at the high school level. So guys like Andrew Wiggins, Kelly Olynyk, Jamal Murray, you name them, have an easier time. Anthony Bennett, it's very relevant. Have an easier time then, but once they get to the NBA, it becomes harder and they don't have a killer instinct, et cetera, et cetera. And for the first time ever, I thought I saw Andrew Wiggins show emotion before he even said a word. He looks at the reporter. He goes, "Who said that?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man. Like, Andrew Wiggins, name names? He wanted to know. So, yeah, he's become much more outspoken. And his word, the metric I use that I've made up that I've never actually tracked, words per answer, seems to have increased over Wiggins' first three years in the league. Now that we're on Andrew Wiggins, I guess we might as well talk about his regression, because for all you just said, and for all that I agree with, on the court it's been a little different story as of late. The Wolves are 5-13. They're second to the last in the Western Conference, ahead of only Dallas. They got off to the hot start, or I guess, you know, most of their games, their wins came in the first 10 games, in which Andrew Wiggins shot 52.6% from behind the three-point line, making 20 of 38 of his attempts. Since then, since those first 10 games, 9 of 32, 28.1%. It's been a tough regression. In his last five, he's made 6 of 18, although he's shooting a little better at the free throw line in the past five games. On the season, he's 76.2%. You'd like that to go up. Points scored at the charity stripe. Still more turnovers than assists, which is a problem. He's taken some shots, especially in the Knicks game, long twos, non-paint twos, fade-around jumpers early in the shot clock that annoy me. But
yeah,
everything you said from a human perspective, totally. He's been an easier cover this year. He's definitely more comfortable, and this is not, it's not necessarily his. You know, whose team is it? Is it Towns' team? Is it Wiggins' team? It's basically all their teams, and they're all seemingly settling into their environment. I don't think that debate warrants much conversation. So what, I know you had to take over my duties on Wednesday and produce a podcast that's part of the Cool to Omaha podcast network, the ALA FM football machine. I want to get your perspective from tuning in to the Wolves Knicks
right
on Twitter. What did you deduce? You didn't watch much of it. So
yeah, I caught the post game at Blue Door after the game, but yeah, no, following games on Twitter is always interesting. There's people like you and a lot of the beat writers that are sticking to facts, or at least when they're commenting, it's painting a picture of the game in front of them. There's also, I follow a lot of fans, and there's also reactionaries who sometimes I don't know, are you trying to get a stir? Are you just kind of dumb? Or are you actually reacting like a normal person was, you know, were to one of the events in the game, the impression I got is Towns was lights out.
Like, Towns is unbelievable.
I mean, 47 and 18, when I say that, doesn't seem right, because we're used to saying 20 and 10 or, you know, 25 and 5 or something. You know what I mean? That's more a normal number. When he's scoring that much, number one, I'm saying, is he stifling, you know, the offense a little bit, or is it becoming kind of funneled too much through him that he's not getting
no
assistance?
This was a unique in that they did run the, you know, those first three possessions were post-ups.
Which is, this is something you guys called for.
Yeah.
You and Tim.
Hashtag give Towns more post-ups 2016.
Right. They're listening to you. The other thing I caught was, I believe it was bench points was like 40-5 or something like
that. Oh, yeah.
And that is frustrating, given that last year, I think, and I know Sam got super mad when I asked about this last year, but I think Sam Mitchell could legitimately say, look, who's on my bench, right? And how am I supposed to deal with this? This year, I think it was supposed to be, you're supposed to have two units.
Well, Sam Mitchell, you got to give Nemanja Bjelica more opportunities when he's not in.
I know.
Sorry.
You know how I feel about Bjelica. He's a guy I really think.
That was a shot at Sam.
I know, yeah. Right, and a fair shot. I look at it now and I say, you have three point guards, and you should be able to have someone who runs that second unit, and you have the Shabazz Muhammad's, Bjelica for the most part, guys like that off the bench. Brandon Rush, I think, hurts them a lot. He's been constantly injured.
Didn't even dress against New York.
It just seems kind of checked out. I thought he was going to be a bigger influence on some of the younger players. I thought he was also going to be a guy who had a very simple role off the bench that was very important. Yeah. Give him the ball and a place to shoot, and he's going to knock it down. Plus, maybe we talk about Tyus Jones and how he brings kind of this culture of winning with him, because at every other stop, this is not unlike a lot of other players, but he's played high-profile games, whether it was in high school or in college, where he has risen to the occasion. And I still think his usage is a little weird. I mean, just because he seems to,
he's
like...
He's the closer, baby. The Joe Nathan, right, as Tim calls him.
Right. And I think that's very astute. At the same time, I see this confidence that I'm actually seeing a little bit more in Andrew Wiggins, but... If a shot needs to be knocked down, just like he did in summer league, again against much more inferior competition, but he'll take it and he'll knock it down. And he just seems to have this kind of, where he lacks maybe in size or even maybe the IQ that a Ricky Rubio has, he has this kind of just killer instinct, if you will, where he, you know, I'm very confident that if he's doing something at the end of the game, he's probably doing the right thing. But either way, yeah, the bench is frustrating. There should be enough there to kind of work with. I still look at it and go, man, this team really could use, you know, kind of a thick, immovable object, a Pekovic, if you will, if you could miraculously heal this man, right?
No, that's not possible.
I know. But what I'm saying is, I think you could use someone of that size, because either guy's coming off the bench, or Jang is a very effective player, right?
But something needs to happen.
Jordan Hill. What? Jordan Hill doesn't play.
Yeah, and you can't call. I mean, you can't call on Jordan Hill to do anything.
Yeah.
The problem is, Nemanja Bjelica. You know, he played poorly. He didn't score. 0 for 3 against the Knicks. Shabazz Muhammad has been awful. You just don't know.
Which is weird, because he should have a bigger role with LaVine starting, right? His role should be very simple. Six-man,
Come in and get buckets, yeah.
Yeah.
Use Nemanja to space the floor and let Boz do the post-ups. I think, one, the book is out on Shabazz.
What he does.
The film is there. So he's struggling to go against defenses who know what he's going to do. The continuity thing is a problem. Cole Aldrich is not a scorer.
Yeah,
I mean,
Adrian Payne's just a wild card.
Yeah,
like, he just
not even we're talking about. Chris Dunn comes in during the first half in relief. He's not, you know, he doesn't run a fluid offense. That much is non-disputable. So, yeah, it's weird. It's weird that Tyus wouldn't get more minutes. I'm not saying he's the answer, but it would be worth trying.
He's playing well.
The point guard rotation has been suspect.
I think Tibbs is looking a little bit long term and being like, Dunn needs to develop this year.
Yeah, he is. It is a long term perspective.
He shows some flashes. Like, there's flashes where I'm like, man, Chris Dunn could be good. And then there's also times when I'm like, I know you. This is the first year in the league,
dude,
but you are not young.
Why are you taking that shot, bro?
Yeah, or just like, what were you? What did you see? Like, you kind of want to get in his head and be like, what are you seeing on the floor? Because it's very different from what we're seeing either through a camera or through, you know, in the press box. But the other thing is, I think Nemanja Bjelica either has to pass or shoot.
I mean, he's just.
You don't want him dribbling. He does, even the. Some guys can do this where they fake a shot, dribble one direction, and not. I just don't think that's his game. I think it's pass or shoot, Nemanja. What you have to do.
Yeah, I think he's unfortunately missed a couple of shots that went halfway down. I think they ultimately start falling.
And that mentally affects him, right? I mean, at any player.
And we have to remember to view the bench in the scope of this is Tom Thibodeau we're talking about. He doesn't play his bench very often. So they're going to struggle because they're not going to be on the court. But Brandon Rush has been awful. I mean, 5 of 22 from the field this year. He hasn't dressed in a lot of games recently. Who knows what's going on with the foot injury. But you know, going back to the Wolves loss to the Knicks, with the Towns post-touches thing, at the end of the first half, Towns is 10 of 11. He's got 26 points. He hadn't attempted a three-point shot, which goes to show you that he can score without taking the three. He doesn't need to fall in love with the three ball. So if you're Tom Thibodeau and at any point during the season you're upset with Towns because he's falling in love with the three-point shot, you lock him in a closet and you make him watch his first half performance against the Knicks.
And to be fair, his game should be inside out, not outside in, right? It shouldn't be, I knocked down a few threes, so now I can score inside. I feel like it still should be established himself inside. And then when he goes out, teams are just like, damn.
And it's okay to shoot and make threes.
It's just the game. I can't. But, was it Hornets 3-10? Like, he just had no inside presence. You go, that's not a good game.
But and the Knicks are defending him with Kyle O'Quinn. I mean, they just did not have an answer. They couldn't defend him. So just they kept going to him down low. And it worked. And the weird part about the loss, too, is the Wolves won the third quarter 25-23.
Yeah.
They win the fourth quarter 30-25. They're in a position to win a game at the end. I mean, Melo doesn't have a good night. He hits the go-ahead jumper. I think everybody in the gym knows it's going in. I mean, those are the shots that he lives for.
Yep.
And, you know, the inbounds play at the end is definitely suspect. LaVine, given the opportunity to throw it in, Thibodeau after the game saying that he had three options. There was an option, you know, whatever the... He didn't list the order in which the options LaVine was supposed to go through in the play, but he said there was an option for Towns, Wiggins, and LaVine himself. So not only do I not like the idea of having LaVine throw it in and having Rubio on the floor, because if Rubio's on the floor, is he going to... There's 2 seconds left in the game. What's he going to do? You're going to give Rubio, a guy who struggles to shoot, the game-winning shot attempt? I don't know if I like that at all. If Rubio's involved at all, he's got to be the one throwing it in. He's the best passer on your team, no question about that. And not just based on his assist numbers, based on when the timing and delivery and where players catch passes that are thrown by Rubio. I mean, he needs to be the one throwing it in. Secondly, if you're going to have LaVine throw it in, simplify it. Don't make the guy go through. He's a scorer. Don't make him go through reads and a progression and make him think. And, you know, ultimately, I think he was befuddled by the situation. It's a high pressure moment. I mean, LaVine is immune to pressure, I'm sure, but I just didn't like the situation at all.
I think he's immune to pressure as a scorer, right? The thing I love about him is sometimes he actually seems to kind of check everything else out and just focus, hey, I just need to hit a three here, right?
Yep.
The problem is, as a passer, you cannot do that. To make a quick football reference, it's a little bit like your running back kind of can just get the ball in space and do things, right? The quarterback can't go, yeah, you know what, I can't think about anything, I just need to throw the ball. That's not going to work out. So I'd see Rubio more as the quarterback, right? Going through the reads, the progression, understanding how the offense works. I see LaVine as kind of the running back. He's just going to either run someone over or juke him out, right? And I think that's kind of, yeah, I question that. And I know going way back, Rick Adelman, I can't remember obviously what game it was after, but Rubio didn't want to inbound the ball, and he basically told Rubio, stop being hard-headed. You are our best passer. That's what you're going to do. And I think that's...
That's interesting.
And again, there's faults in what Adelman did at times, but this is a very accomplished coach who very much understands the players he has and how an offense works and all this. So in my mind, yeah, Rubio is the kind of guy if... You know, you don't want him, you know, in a scoring position under pressure, I don't think, just because I don't think he's your best scorer. But I think in terms of having a clear head and not changing how he plays the game in a pressure situation, Rubio's the kind of guy. And you know what? Throwing that ball to LaVine probably isn't a terrible idea because I think, again, he's it's kind of funny. He just doesn't seem to let anything bother him.
He's unflappable.
I mean, he's very much, I call him an irrational confidence player, but it works because his shots drop in and it gets everyone excited. And he, you know, anything Levine does is exciting in some capacity, right? Yeah. Even when he messes up, it's kind of funny. You know, it's kind of exciting.
You can liken him to J.R. Smith in the regard of his playing style.
Yeah, yeah.
Levine needed to have a strong second half because he had a weak first half. In the loss to the Knicks, I had the numbers in front of me, and I wanted to say them because I thought that was an important storyline to the game. But he finishes with 17 points. He was 5 of 13 from the field, only was 1 of 5 from the three-point line. But of those 17 points, a lot of them came in the second half. 9 of them came in the fourth quarter. So when he needed to score and when the Wolves needed baskets, Levine was there. What was different about this loss is Tyus Jones didn't end the game. Ricky Rubio did. They started the fourth quarter with Rubio, Tyus, and Levine on the floor, Bielitsa as well, and Karl Anthony Towns. So you have one Rubio and four shooters, which in theory is a good idea. But the problem was the first pass created when this, you know, in the 2-3 minutes that those guys were on the floor was so, you know, the first pass created was created and often created an open shot or an open enough shot. And these are shooters he's on the floor with who are going to shoot the ball. And so in theory, the lineup was awesome. It should have worked, but the ball didn't move enough. And at some point or another, Thibodeau said, "I've had enough. We got to get the regular scorers out there." And the starters did a good job to get them back in the game. Rubio hit his only two shot attempts in the fourth quarter after missing every single attempt he took. I thought he played well during the game, certainly, but not well enough to win. And it was it's a tough loss, but If the Wolves can bottle the energy with which they played during the fourth quarter, the resilience, and use that and play that way for 48 minutes, they're going to be a very good team. But the problem, as we've seen during third quarters and sometimes during fourth quarters and second quarters, they don't play that way consistently.
That is what baffles me the most.
It shouldn't, because I don't know if you listened to the last Locked On Wolves podcast, but I talked to Jared Dubin.
Okay.
Who hosts Locked On Knicks. He does stuff for Vice Sports and the Hardwood Paroxysm and Basketball Network. I think that's stepback.com now. I don't know what
really?
I don't know what that entity has evolved into, but they do great work, obviously. And it goes back to, you know, Wiggins and Levine in their first year under Flip Saunders. You know, they're given so many opportunities and repetitions and trial by fire, but they're just so young and the team was so bad that they didn't learn how to value possessions. If anything, those were the least valuable possessions those guys will ever play in their careers. And so to expect them now to value every single, I mean, it just takes time. And there are possessions that they don't value, and they cannot do that. That's Tom Thibodeau probably pulls this, whatever hair he has
left. You know he does.
It drives him nuts.
Yeah, no. So I actually think that's a really good point, and I kind of wonder. This is what I was writing about when I wrote something earlier in this week. That
plug it, coldomaha.com.
Yeah, coldomaha.com. I believe it came out Monday, and I just said, look, the Timberwolves revolution is going to take time. This is not what fans want to hear, or even fans of the league who just want to see a good Timberwolves team because of the young talent. I think people go, well, basketball turns over quicker than a football team that takes, you know, 53 players and you have to build up the team. It, you know, takes longer than other sports. Baseball, you have to go in the minor leagues. You can just plug in players that are ready to go in the NBA. Having said that, that is a very fair point. The Wolves, I think Britt pointed this out in a recent column, probably could use KG, right? I mean, to some extent, or a veteran presence kind of like that.
See, I think KG does the same thing that Thibodeau does.
I know.
The sense of being on them about value things like, you know, small details and valuing possessions. It's not like KG would be definitely useful on the court. But the Wolves, as they showed in the fourth quarter, with exception to the lack of execution on the final play, have the talent to be good when they can buckle down and do what they need to do. But offensively is where they struggle. They, you know, hero ball comes into play.
I think it happens on defense too. I think those guys sometimes try to play individually or get outside the system.
Yeah.
But there is a learning curve there. And then the other thing too is that I think Thibodeau, there's three aspects to him.
Thibodeau,
sorry.
We have to get better as a show because I've gotten a lot of feedback on that.
Yeah, no.
Which is why I say Gorgui Zhang now.
Yeah, I have that right Thibodeau, and I will say that right from now on.
This is basically me. It's not you. I'm working on it myself.
But anyways, there's three aspects to him. There's him not during a game, which he seems very rational during practices. He seems very rational before and after games. He seems to have kind of this magic window, if you want to call it that or whatever, where he steps on the court when he's you know, in the game, and he's yelling and screaming and doesn't sit down ever. And then as soon as he kind of walks through that door or whatever, that window, he's analytical and smart. And with the exception of that Hornets game, which you can't blame him for being really upset about that, he's I don't know. He seems to be able to kind of cool off very much quicker than I thought he would. There's him during the game where I think it's helpful at times with him shouting instructions, but I look at, to use a concrete example, that Boston game where he's out of timeouts in the fourth quarter and things just are falling apart. It seems like, and this is a very difficult task, but it's not like he can kind of coach on the go in that situation without using timeouts. Like, he still needs, I mean, it'd be crazy, right, if he didn't need to use timeouts and he literally could instruct him. And sometimes I think it muddles him, actually, when he's offering like 1,000 different explanations in probably very coarse language, very loud, at all times, right? I mean, I think it becomes a lot to process for a young team. Maybe as they get older, however, you think about those Bulls teams, they had been around for a little while, 42 or 41 and 41 the last two seasons. A more seasoned team like that maybe reacts better to on-court instructions than does a team like the Timberwolves, which there's a culture of losing with the Wolves. There's a lot of inexperience, you know, 100 different factors, right, going into it. And then there's kind of him in the locker room, and that's what I'm actually most curious about. We can't know that, right? We're not going to sneak
behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes. Is he that crazy guy? You know what I mean? Is he kind of a crazy guy at halftime, or is he kind of the rational guy we see, or is it something in between? And what can he do in a situation where he probably can't talk to each player individually? How does he get a message across that, with the exception of now these most recent games, but the first half is great. Do the same thing in the second half. You know what I mean? Pretty much. Don't have this weird slump where you start playing hero ball in the third quarter. And that's, I'm curious how he handles that, because this is a much different task than Chicago was, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine. And the problem is, and Jim Peterson was talking about it on the broadcast. I was watching the Wolves Knicks broadcast before the game. Thibodeau isn't used to having to do things like call a timeout because his team is settling for long jump shots when they're in the bonus.
Yeah.
So he has to do things like call timeout and say, hey, attack the basket, draw contact, try to get to the free throw line, because any contact that you draw, they're going to call, and you're going to get two attempts at the charity stripe. So players lack that attention to detail. These players do, because of coaching in the past. Thibodeau isn't used to doing that. So
it's a learning curve.
I think on the court during games, what you see, it's like, did you ever watch Game of Thrones?
No, I'm probably okay. One of three people in America.
In Game of Thrones, the main character is being punished for their sins. And every time she's like, let me out of this jail cell. Shame. Or confess. Yeah. And, like, just, it's like you sitting here talking and me going, no, 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 that's wrong, that's wrong. I mean, that's how people are going to learn. Yeah. It's if you reach for candy when you're not supposed to.
Slap, right.
Going to slap. And Tibbs is constantly slapping throughout the course of a game. So it's just, you know, a young team. They got to learn. They got to understand those small details. And Thibodeau needs to teach them.
To be fair, over a 5-year period, right? I believe that's his contract.
I think they'll figure it out.
And that's my point, is you can't tune him out. You literally cannot, because he is so damn loud, right? Yeah. I still believe in the system. I'm disappointed with the results, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, and there's the old cliche, or maybe it's not old. I don't know how old it is. Process over results when you're assessing the Wolves. And you know, that's something to keep in mind all season. It was, you know, before the game, Joakim Noah talked, and just to wrap up the Thibs coaching point, but he said something to the effect of, you know, you didn't know what you had with Thibs until you didn't have it anymore. And Jimmy Butler said it last season too, at the end of the season, now coached by Fred Hoiberg.
One of us.
He's actually an Iowa guy. But he played for the Wolves.
Yeah.
So that's basically, he's basically Minnesotan.
Yeah.
you don't know what you have in Thibs until it's gone. He's saying that.
And it was very obvious in the results of that first team with Woodward.
In the Target Center, yeah. So for Wolves players to hear that from established veterans like Noah, Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, I think there's something to that. And I'm not going to worry about a rift or how Thibs
oh,
is,
no. They, I Thibs have is never heard scenes. Anyone put it on Thibs. And last year, although they didn't explicitly say it, there were times when they're like, this is on Sam Mitchell, guys, and most people went, yep.
Oh, if you listen to The Scoop with ESPN 1500's Darren Wolfson, he had on ESPN's coach Dave Thorpe, who Zach Lowe has on his podcast all the time, and Thorpe has said this on both Zach Lowe's and Doogie's most recent podcast, The Scoop. The Wolves last year were Sam Mitchell's, and he goes off on Sam Mitchell and his abilities as a coach, et cetera, et cetera. It's worth checking out. But just transitioning into other stuff, the Wolves play the Knicks tonight, so they're going to get a second chance. After that, the schedule gets a little tougher. I know they have the Spurs coming in at home. They play Golden State at home in the coming weeks. Detroit,
Charlotte's not terrible.
Yeah, Detroit played their best game of the year the other day against Boston. They beat Boston, so they're no slouch. It's we're gonna, you know, Britt Robeson of MinPost a couple nights ago, a week ago, I don't know how long it was, you know, he said you know, the Wolves could play 10 games, they could play really well in those 10 games, they might win three of those games, and they shouldn't be discouraged by those performances and with when they play well, like the fourth quarter, like the way they played in the fourth quarter against the Knicks. They played well, they played spirited, they played with energy. I thought they did things on the court that signified that they do pay attention to the details and they understand them. You know, after an offensive rebound, Andrew Wiggins is trying to get it to Karl Anthony Towns, who's guarded by Carmelo Anthony in the post. And after not being able to get it to him, he moves the ball and Rubio makes a nice play and drives the lane and scores. There are certain things that they do throughout the course of a game and throughout the flow of a game that absolutely should drive you bonkers. I mean, they lead the league in transition turnover rate, so they're turning the ball over on 19.3% of their possessions in transition. That's an extremely high number when you consider the middle-of-the-road team, the Jazz. They turn it over 12% of their possessions. They're the worst team in defensive transition, allowing opponents to score at a rate of 56.9%, and they're giving, you know, points per possession is 1.21 they're allowing in transition. So they're not getting back. Their floor balance is off. You know, there were a couple instances, and this is what I'm writing about and collecting film clips about now, is there are shots that they take at the offensive end where four, if not five, players are below the free throw line, either chasing offensive rebounds or oftentimes with Wiggins and Levine standing in the corner, not getting back on defense or preparing for a defensive rebound and then offensive transition. So that they're making little mistakes like that, but I think, you know, the offensively trying to find mismatches, those are details that Thibodeau is no doubt instilling in them, and I think they're picking up on some of them. It's just gonna, you know, as you wrote in your article on Monday, it's gonna take time.
Yeah, and I really do think you get a couple good wins in here under your belt. I think momentum is going to build quick with this team. They're more talented than their record shows.
Yeah. They're like the anti-Clippers in that the Clippers, once things go wrong,
just crank.
They start to really go wrong. But the Wolves, once they go right, in theory, you'd think they're the team that could get on a roll.
Towns already has a 47-point game. Wiggins already does. You look at the other kind of leading scores against Golden State, 31 for Levine, 28 against the Jazz, and he had 26 against the Pelicans. So,
yeah, but maybe they should bring him off the bench, Tom. Tongue in cheek.
This is under certain circumstances, given size, but you were probably right, and I probably should
back
off
that
point.
No, it's okay.
Like Nemanja Bjelica. That's really what I'm getting at with that point.
Sure.
And what he offers the team when he's playing well. One final point, I don't want to make too much of this, but it is concerning. I was in the locker room after that Hornets game when three of the guys, I think it was Rubio, Jang, and I'm trying to remember who else, maybe Levine or something, it was Wiggins, said, we need to stop playing hero ball. This is how we're going to fix the third quarter, or whatever. And then you have Towns saying, this is on me.
I need to do more.
He reiterated this point, and Kent Youngblood had a feature, if you will.
And then Towns has a huge game and the Wolves still lose. So maybe there's, you know, maybe there's a middle ground of stuff that that Towns needs to do.
I
say that very tongue in cheek.
And I see this as a player who, again, has talked to a lot of stars, who is on the cover of ESPN, the magazine, who is widely, even if you're not a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, NBA fans know him. He's also very popular because he's been on shows like Jimmy Fallon and stuff and kicked ass because he is funny and likable. I've seen a little change in kind of tone in the way he acts, and I think it's reaction to sky-high expectations, right? And I think, like any other player, there's a little bit of a sophomore slump. Again, maybe this is the game that broke him out of it, in which case, whatever. It's, you know, that's a net positive if he breaks out of kind of a slump. And I think he also has to understand, like, I know he knows there's a lot of talent on the team, but he cannot pick up this team, throw it on his back. And
he doesn't need to. I absolutely agree.
Right. And he's also different from a lot of stars in the sense that he is a forward, and a lot of these stars we think of were guards, right, who dominated the
wing players. Yep.
Right. So, I mean, I don't see this as a long-term issue. I see this as a very immediate short-term issue
he's growing up.
And you know what? Why I started with Wiggins, right? You're different in your third year. As you play more basketball, as you're into, you know, get more into your career, your perspective changes, right? I mean, he had to be floating on cloud nine all last year, right? I mean, it couldn't have gone better for him. And now it's so funny. I'm going back to that Hornets game I was at. We were saying, man, Towns is slumping. He had 22 and 10, I think. For most players, that's a really good game. Mm-hmm. So we have different expectations for him. I think he'll handle it well. I do like that Thibodeau really is just diffusing this and says, I don't care what I really believe Thibodeau when he says, I don't care about the highlight dunks. I don't care about what players say. I think he really just cares that they play basketball the way he wants them to play it. And I also think that it's as much as we said, there aren't a ton of veteran players that have a big influence over the team. Maybe a guy like Gorgui Dieng gets through to him, right? I mean, he's not, at this point, Gorgui Dieng is not a young player. He's in his prime. And I think he just, you know, there's multiple ways that maybe a Wiggins or a Levine or something like Rubio for sure could get through to him and just be like, dude, you don't have to carry this team, and it's okay if you're not as good as you were your first year. Because my guess is he will be better than that down the line, right? And this is, again, why you give Tibbs a 5-year contract and say, work out the kinks this year and then let's get rolling. Because truth be told, and we talk a lot about kind of the fans and stuff like this, I think people know this team is doing crazy things because Levine and Wiggins dunks go viral. And because
I don't think they really know because they don't go to games because they're last in home attendance, but that is neither here nor there.
But my point is,
I'm about a week away from fan shaming, honestly. Continue. It's not Flash Seats' problem either.
No.
Attendance was poor before that.
I agree. I do think what fills that building is wins. I think Thibodeau gets that.
It shouldn't be that way, but yes.
But my point in all this is that I think once this team catches fire, it could just roll, because all of a sudden that becomes a tough place to play. These players are clearly capable of being impact players on the court. And regardless, I'm just saying, as much as, to use a local example, I saw some cracks in the game with the Vikings and people go, hey, I was 5-0 and now they're 6-6. Well, we saw some things in that 5-0 that were troubling, and this maybe led to 6-6. It's the opposite with the Wolves. They go, how are they over under 40.5 or whatever from Vegas, and they're 5-13 or whatever. I go, well, there are aspects of this team that look like a 41-42 win team at the very least. They just need to put it all together. And I got to imagine, kind of by hook or by crook, like, Thibodeau will kind of force them to be
Thibodeau.
God,
see,
damn.
I'm tibsing you by doing that.
No, I appreciate that. Thibodeau will, just by his brute nature, I think, will force the team to play the way he wants them to play. And I think he hasn't said anything that's troubling to me, which is positive.
Yeah. Thibodeau is fine. I'm not worried about him. I don't want to bury the lead here. I might be burying the lead here, but I have a nugget.
Go ahead.
In the Wolves' last two losses, you know, Coach speaks, he does his thing, you leave, you go into the locker room, and in the locker room, either players have already showered and they're at their locker changing, or they're still sitting there on their phone or doing something. It depends on how they feel. After the two most recent losses, Towns is at his locker in his uniform, the last person to change out of his uniform, with his head buried in either his hands or his arms. And he's sitting there, just his head buried and his hands in his arms. You can tell he's taking these losses pretty hard.
And that's a good sign.
It's it's well intended, but it's I don't know if it's a requirement to be that emotional, and it's not a knock on his any of his human traits.
And I think it's authentic. I don't think he's faking it.
Cynic in me could argue that it is sort of something because he knows. I mean, he's doing it for long enough for the media to see it, but I'm not going down that road.
Yeah.
Assuming it's authentic, he's doing it, I think, emotionally, maybe reel it back a little bit. And after this loss to New York, he gets up and he's on his way to the showers, and it's, of all people, Tyus Jones says, "Hey," and Tyus has a corner locker, and I wasn't eavesdropping on their conversation. Tyus had already changed and he's getting into his clothes, but they talked for like 2 minutes in hushed voices, and they could have been talking about plans after the game. I don't know, but it definitely was Towns being emotional and then going to the locker room, and he's sort of in his isolated, pouty, resting bitch face mood. And it felt, it got the sense, and AP Krasinski, maybe he'll talk about it because he was standing right there. You got the sense that Towns was waving, or Tyus was waving Carl over to be like, "Hey, dude, it's okay. Like, the loss is hard to take, but they got to bear this burden as a team. Towns doesn't need to put it all on himself." And after this Knicks loss, he's still sticking to the point where he says he needs to do more. I don't think he meant it in the sense that he needs to do more than score 47 points, but just doing more to help the team win. And I just think you need teammates, man. As this game shows, you can have the best individual performance of all time, but if you don't have teammates coming through for you, you're not going to win the game. And so allowing the teammates to also bear the burden, guys like Wiggins and LaVine, Tyus Jones, Ricky Rubio too, that there's benefits to that. And I think Towns needs to understand that this is a collective effort.
And that's good on Tyus to not go, "Towns is a superstar, I'm the backup point guard, I can't say something," right? I mean, if he has something to say, he should say it.
And they're close. They came into the league together. They were drafted together. They did the introductory press conference together. I mean,
I think as Towns plays better, some of the stuff goes away too.
Yeah, winning cures all.
Well, not only that, but it's just, I think he also looks at it and goes, "Man, LaVine's having a good season. Man, Wiggins is having a good season. Wow, Tyus has really kind of stepped his game up a little bit." It maybe is hard to be kind of the guy to be like, "You know what? I'm not living up to my expectations." And I think it's hard for him because he has 1 year of experience and that year went phenomenally well. And so, again, I don't want to overreact to all this stuff because I think the system in place works, and the worst thing they can do is make a dumb trade or create a rift in the locker room that's incurable or something like that. They just need to, when they're playing,
stick to what they're doing.
Play consistently. Yep. Play consistently. That's what they have to do.
They, oh man, shoot. it was there and now it's gone.
I think we're,
I hadn't, yeah, we're getting
reaching the end.
Longer than I wanted to go maybe, but no, it's been pretty good conversation. I don't mind. Oh man. Ugh.
I'm sure it's a good point.
Oh, I just thought it was a good point. Maybe it'll come back to me. It's not, though.
It's for the next Lockdown Wolves podcast.
You were talking about Andrew. This isn't my point, but I wanted to bring it up. Andrew Wiggins stealing cookies in the media room before the game.
Yeah.
Before the Knicks game, John Lucas the III.
Yeah.
He's got the bucket full of candy and gum, and he's going down the bench offering candy.
Right.
So I got half of mine to call him the Candy Man. But that's Lamar Odom's nickname, so I can't do that.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was hilarious. But yeah, I lost the point that I was going to make, and I thought it was pretty good. But no, I found it.
Yeah.
Found it. Grab.
It's back.
I'm making a grab motion with my eyes shut in midair and pulling open like I'm reading a note. You say, the Wolves miss KG, the guys need KG. Well, in the time I covered KG late in his career for the Wolves, what was he really good at? Encouraging his teammates. And if Towns is to draw anything from KG, I think right now it would be for him to not only put all of this on himself, but get those buckets, Zach. Encourage his teammates, enable them, empower them to also be guys who step up in key roles. I mean, Towns doesn't need to do all the scoring. He doesn't need to make the clutch shots. There are other guys who can do that, and embracing that fact is something I think he could certainly do.
It's a big role, but he just has a role. I mean, at the end of the day, everyone has to kind of do something. So, yeah.
Let's get out of here. Woo-hoo. Tom Schreier, TSCHREIER,
yeah.
3 on Twitter, at Cold Omaha MN on Twitter, at Locked On Wolves on Twitter, at Locked On Podcast on Twitter, at Zachary BD on Twitter. My name is Zachary Bennett for Tom Schreier. So long.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Hey, hey, hey.
With the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.